If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
That's the thing about podcasts is when you're on the air, and it's like therapy, you know? If I can't talk to my family about this stuff, I'll talk to you, Matt, and all our listeners.
You know, tell your whole podcast.
Yeah. So who are we talking about today, Matt?
Who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass, and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish.
Day to day, meal to meal, sick and tired, pay to pay, cog in a wheel, lost appeal, proletarian raw deal or no deal, dilemma surreal, suppressive antennas, oppressant distress, has censored the message to lesser expressions, organic life made of vestige, GMOs and pesticides invented with so-called progressive intentions. Yet enforced through deadly conventions, a subtle percentage of undetected intoxicants implemented to torment the malcontents that dissented and objected to the regimen that has us all infected. Scraping by for a meal, what's the deal? Pain's unreal, addiction's concealed. I can't feel without the bottle of pills. On the streets if you can't pay the bills. Exploited from corner to corner. Rehab cycle rewarded to relapse. Insurance bills max. Slip through the cracks. No coming back from the wrong side of these tracks. Face facts, it's your health that they attack. Mega corp maniacs who stack racks without the state tax. On the backs of slaves overtaxed. Taking it raw bareback by Wall Street wolf pack. Nymphomaniacs, it's time to ditch the Prozac and Coronavax. Embrace a health throwback, the whole earth a blue zone, imagine that. Imagination suffered infestations of sick ideations, doomed to self-desolation. If good nutrition is the foundation, corporations owe explanations for the state of health in this nation. Industrial revolution was not the solution. Sick from pollution and clouds of confusion. Our broken constitution left us facing global persecution. Simple solutions to complex equations. We are at the hands of this creation. The industrial revolution was not the solution. Sick from pollution and clouds of confusion.
They believe, and I believe that they're right, that the biggest danger to mankind right now is man himself.
If it was carbs killing us, we would have known that a long time ago, but, you know, we've had grains or agriculture for like 10, 12 millennia. And I'm not saying I recommend eating grains. It's definitely not as a staple, definitely not with every meal. But then we also had sugar, which has been around for like more than 1,000 years. And like the last 300 years, we've been able to really refine and process and manufacture just tons and tons of it. And, you know, we had the Industrial Revolution that was basically fueled by sugar. And so we did not have the chronic diseases of today for a very long time. It was really very well correlated with the introduction of the seed oils.
Yeah, there is, but it requires that people wake up, requires that they really learn the truth instead of live their life in fantasy land. You see, because nothing can exist without the consent of the people. Unless they buy it, it's not going to happen. And all of these brands lead to the public's ultimate acceptance of what they're going to do. In fact, they're designed to make the public ask for it.
Ladies and gentlemen, here we are back again on the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast, and this is going to be exactly what I needed, hopefully what you needed too, wherever you are listening to the show. But thank you for joining me here, your host, Mystic Mark, and today I have a new friend, a friend of a friend, and he is quickly making his way into this podcast in the best way possible, which is by sending me a book. The title of his book is How to Actually Live Longer. Wow. This is a topic that I think we all care about, whether we realize it or not. I've cared about it for a long time, but without further ado, Christian Yordanov, functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner, author, and all around interesting fellow joins me here on the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. Christian, thanks for sitting through that intro. How are you? And what brings you to the show today, aside from writing this awesome book?
I'm good, Mark. Thank you so much. I am good. I'm just having one of those weird days where just, I guess I'm procrastinating. So I'm researching various weird and wonderful things. And I just ordered $400 of supplements. Some really cool stuff I never, you know, tried before. So I'm like a kid on Christmas. So yeah, we can talk about a lot of this. Obviously, I'm in the health space. A lot of the more you learn about anything, it seems like the more psyops you uncover, whether that's in health or government or, you know, finance, you know how it is. So we can cover some of those topics if you're up for it, bro.
I'm absolutely up for it. I love the book. It's fantastic. Nice hardcover. Not too big. A good, easy read. And I'm curious, though, where did this journey begin for you? You know, what motivated this book? I have a couple of questions about the contents of the book, of course, but I want to ask you about how this all started first.
Yeah, so very basically in my late teens and all my through my 20s, I was really living a pretty, I guess, rock and roll lifestyle. So a lot of drinking and partying and stupid stuff. And kind of, I dropped out of college a couple of times. And it was only in my early 30s that I realized how terribly I was living and how I just saw my grandmother at that age. She was kind of in her last years. And that was a really big wake up call for me. There's a damn, like, I don't want to end up like that with multiple strokes and super debilitated, a massive burden on my kids. Like, she was a fairly serious, because my granddad, his deterioration really took it out of her, took the life out of her. So I was like, damn, I just don't, none of these things look very appealing, to be a burden on your loved one or your wife or your husband. And then, or on the other end of this, on the other side of the coin, like to see your loved one, your partner for like 50, 60 years deteriorate and die, and, you know, that kind of way. So at that time I had met my now wife, she was my girlfriend obviously at the time. And it just really kind of made me start taking my health more seriously. Also, she had a lot of health problems because she was a professional ballet dancer for some 20 years, and that really destroyed her health. And my mother was having, she had IBS for 13 years. So like all around me, people were like suffering, and I was somehow unscathed through all my horrific, you know, eating and drinking and cigarettes, all that stuff, you know. So I just kind of started on this journey of undoing the damage I was doing to myself to help my girlfriend at the time, my wife now, with her health. And it eventually culminated in me, you know, getting a few certifications and things like that, and writing these books. I've written a book on autism, and now I work. I'm basically trying to pay it forward. I couldn't help my grandma, you know, and I'm just trying to, with the knowledge I gained, I'm just trying to kind of pay it forward to other people and be a part of the kind of the solution to the massive problem that, which is, as we all know, the modern world and its trappings have really kind of destroyed our health. And yeah, we need a massive push to start undoing the damage that's being done to humanity.
Yeah, it's like they want us to live our life on loan, you know. They want us to give up our health and then pay for it back. And it's really sickening, and I'm really excited to have this conversation with you, because quite honestly, it's something that I shy away from with this podcast, because it is a topic that goes to the core of everything, every reason I started this podcast. It's a big deal. It gets me very emotional thinking about health, not because of my own health, but because of my family's health. And my biggest obstacle in that is trying to get my family to understand what's killing them. And I love that the first chapter of your book is understand what's killing you, because it's so often that you try to explain to people, you know, what they're doing in their, you know, daily lives is not benefiting them, and you know, they look at you like you're the crazy one for pointing it out. So when it comes to that personally, have you had much issues with that in your own life, with your own family members, trying to maybe reverse some of the damage they're causing without really knowing it?
Oh, so much, man, so much. Like my dad, I just saw him there, I guess a month ago or so. We were visiting him for a bit, and he's just basically, he's in his early 60s, and he just says, look, another 10 years and you'll probably not be here. I'm like, for fuck's sake, like, I know all this stuff and all of these things, and they just won't listen. And even with my mother, I helped her reverse her IBS and, you know, resolve all those symptoms completely, but it was such an uphill battle. It's so draining to try to convince, you know, you can't get healthy for somebody. So you can give them the advice and they can do what they want with it, but when it's someone you love, you're constantly like haranguing them, or did you take your supplements, did you eat this, why are you eating that? And I realized that with family, you just have to let them be, because we're all on our journey, and as it were, not everyone is meant to be awoken. Not everyone is meant to be saved. Some people are maybe here to experience suffering. Maybe that's their part of their mission. You know, maybe in previous lives they had it all fine and dandy, and they were kings and queens or something like that. And now they're back here for that part of the education of the universe, or the reincarnation sort of cycle. Who knows? So now I'm more and more, it's the same with friends, you know. At the beginning, when I was getting into all the lab testing I do, I'd offer friends, you know, let's do an organic urine testing for various things, and hair testing, and anyone that would want to do a lab test, I'm like, come on, I can get all this cool stuff. And then I would give them, and what I realized is that the best, the people that are most motivated to change and to kind of start taking care of their health, oftentimes, more often than not, are the ones that have just endured quite a lot of suffering, or they had a big health scare. And then when they invest their own money into like working with a practitioner, when they pay, they have the saying, when you pay, you pay attention, you know. So if you can, someone can give you a book for free, you might not open it, or a free course, but when you pay a couple of $1,000 to work with a coach, you start following through on their recommendations. So I noticed those are the people that get the best results, right? They still haven't given up. They still believe they can, you know, heal themselves. and they just need someone to show them the way, and they're ready to do anything to get that result. So I kind of, more and more, I just don't even bother like telling people that I know that, oh, you know, we could do this and make stuff, and I just let them come to me. And if someone comes to me and they're super into it, then, you know, I know that it's going to be an amazing journey for them, because not to blow my own horn, but like I know things that would be life-changing for most people if they were to implement, if, you know, as you could probably tell from, that's why I'm writing books about it, you know, to share some of it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No need to understate yourself, Christian. You are on one hell of a journey, and we appreciate you for it. When it comes to longevity, though, there are so many, I think, shortcut type offers that you might be presented, but really there are no shortcuts to longevity. There's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it, it seems. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. Actually, if there were shortcuts, the two shortcuts are certain high-quality supplements can actually shortcut certain things. So I love supplementation. So I'm always buying new stuff and trying new stuff. So my clients don't have to, you know, my readers don't have to. And then the other thing is obviously working with someone that knows what they're doing. Those are the only true shortcuts. Otherwise, absolutely, you're correct. There are no shortcuts to the thing. Just as an example, let's say you got the memo today that seed oils are bad, but all your life, let's say you were eating, you know, foods, prepared foods, restaurant foods, takeout foods that were heavily drenched in seed oils. Now, what that means is over these decades that have passed, these omega-6 polyunsaturated fats have become part of you, part of your cells, your brain, your heart, your muscles, your skin, you know, your organs, your vascular system. So it can take years and years. Even if you stop eating these seed oils today, it will take years, like 5, 6, 7 years for you to replace them with better quality building blocks. For example, more monounsaturated and saturated fats, which are a lot less fragile, a lot less prone to getting damaged from like oxygen, heat, UV rays from sun. So that's that process. There is no way you can, there are some ways to accelerate it, but they can be potentially dangerous. And then once you get there, it's not like you can suddenly do, this is one mistake some people make, is they get better. Let's say it takes them 6 to 12 months to resolve whatever issue they were having, or a few issues they were having. And then they go back to the previous sort of diet, stressful lifestyle, and kind of stuff like that. And they very quickly will deteriorate, at least some of the time, right? At least a lot of those people will deteriorate. So I try to kind of let them do that. So because, you know, you cannot control people. You're especially like as a practitioner, as a coach, you're not their mommy, you're not their daddy. They're coming to you for advice. But if they want to live a certain way, you just have to let them be, you know, learn some hard lessons on their own. But then when they come back, they're like, oh my God, I don't feel good. I'm like, let's check your diet. Are you taking the supplements? Are you sleeping well? Oh no. Oh, and you're under a lot of stress. But it kind of makes sense. Let's start sort of lining up our ducks in a row again. And they start improving, right? So that teaches them the lesson firsthand that it's not like you can get to the destination. It's not a sprint. It's not even a marathon. You know, it's a game that you just keep playing until the end of your life. So some of us play the game of disease and degeneration, just becoming a statistic. And then some of us will decide to play the game of, you know, this longevity game where we just, it's a decision, it's an intention to every day to think, how can I eat clean today? How, even though I'm traveling, you know, or even though I might be in a situation where the food won't be amazing and the environment will not be super optimal, how can I, you know, get the upper hand? What can I do to improve this? And that's how I'm always thinking. Even if we're traveling somewhere, the first thing I look for is where are there organic stores? So at least we can get a few bits and pieces so we're not, you know, relying on whatever's in the convenience store, which, you know, is usually going to be crap. So it's kind of a mind shift, a switch in your mind where you just decide to live this lifestyle. And more people are doing it. And that's why these industries are becoming bigger, you know, like these grass-fed meat companies, paleo snacks, grass-fed beef jerky snacks, organic groceries delivered to your door. So more and more these industries are being supported. So there now there's a whole economy to support health rather than just the disease economy, right? The sick care system. So, you know, these biometric tracking devices for your heart rate variability. So more and more, there's like this market for health. And the more that grows, the more money will go into that. And then the more they will market to kind of normies. And then the more normies will start wearing like trackers. Not that that's an optimal thing to do, but, you know, more people will like starting to buy organic, maybe supplementing more. And I think we can sort of move the ship a couple of degrees, and that will have a great impact on millions and millions of people's lives. I really think that's, I'm trying to be positive about it, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, I've already been on that wave for quite a while. Organic grocery stores and all that are not hard to find where I live. So I even go to, there's a couple co-ops within reach, and they don't even get produce from out of the country. I mean, aside from maybe like blackberries, oranges, and a couple other things like that that have a harder time growing regionally, they have mostly local farms with produce from those local farms. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, that's what I see more and more available, luckily for me here. And I know that's not the case everywhere. I just happen to live in an area where people are a little bit more conscious of that. But one of the big ways that I think people fall victim to the American diet and maybe not even realize it is through restaurants. You know, we have all these restaurants, and you know, they do a good job of letting people know, you know, hey, we have peanuts or whatever allergen on the menu. But very rarely do you ever have a restaurant that breaks down something like the ingredient list. Maybe it tells you what kind of oils they're using in their cooking process, which is all vital, you know. And I wish we would see more transparency. Obviously, you know, some restaurants want to keep their recipes secret and whatnot, but I would love to see more transparency there so that people could make the choice and avoid these basically deadly PUFAs, which is the funniest acronym I've read in a while, but it stands for polyunsaturated fatty acids. So tell me about these and how these are detrimental to our health. And I imagine going out to eat would be a scenario where you'd be exposed to something like this seed oil. Yeah. If you're, you know, cooking most of your meals at home, you know, it's pretty easy to control what oils are in your food so long as they're not, you know, already pre-processed foods. And yeah, but I don't know how easy it would be at a restaurant unless you want to be that type of person who goes and asks the waiter, you know, which I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It's just I'm a little too shy for that myself.
Yeah, I'm like your worst nightmare type of customer, you know, when it comes to it. Dude, I hate going to restaurants just for that very reason. It's because even if you tell them you don't know, or are they going to oblige you? But yeah, so just to give you my personal strategy, at least when my daughter was a bit younger, she's three now, but when she was two, I'd go and I said, look, my kid is allergic to seed oils, and, you know, she's going to try everything that we eat. So can you make sure and tell the kitchen that, and we can use butter for cooking. If you don't have butter, we can use coconut oil for frying. And then olive oil is like the least worst option if they don't have the other two, which they usually will, you know. And then you can have others. Like my personal strategy now is just to kind of say, look, I'm allergic to that. Just use butter for my, and, but you also have to be a little bit smart about what are you going to buy? What are you going to order at a restaurant? You know, a takeout is a different story. That's even harder. But at a restaurant, you can say, I just want a steak, let's say, or a piece of fish. And they might do that on a grill, like in the south of Portugal here. If you order just maybe oven baked potatoes, obviously not as nice as potatoes fries, but the potato fries, you know, they're going to be dunked in highly heated. I don't know, in the States, probably soybean oil. In Europe, it's usually sunflower oil, and a few other things can be used. And the problem when you heat these PUFAs, polyunsaturated fatty acids, they are, because they are polyunsaturated, they have multiple places on them that are less protected, let's say, like a saturated fatty acid would, right? So there's no hydrogen there. And that can be basically attacked by free radicals, oxygen, again, UV light, like I said earlier, and they just spontaneously degrade even when they're just in normal room temperature. Even actually, if you get like a, let's say, a walnut oil that's been cold pressed, something very fancy sounding, right? And you buy that at the local Whole Foods, and then you bring it home. If you leave it in the fridge over a long enough timeline, that thing will go rancid, because polyunsaturated fats just spontaneously oxidize or peroxidize. They just get damaged. And when they get damaged, they basically break up into smaller pieces. And there's hundreds of different ones that they've classified, you know, aldehydes and other bits and pieces like that. But those then become dangerous because they can react or sort of, they create these chain reactions of, it's like if one polyunsaturated fatty acid is damaged, it's like a spark that can start a wildfire because it will damage the one next to it and so on and so forth. And these can, remember, these can be in like a cell that is in the heart or the brain or a blood vessel.
Right.
Or it could be the mitochondria inside the cell. And obviously, if these things get damaged, that means that the cell can become dysfunctional, or at the very least, it costs you nutrients and energy and antioxidants to protect from this. So this is nutrients, energy, and resources that you could be using for other purposes, just kind of maintaining your body and, you know, supporting brain function. There's a million better uses,
right,
for your resources than to protect from damage, right?
Well, and
here's the thing. Yeah, go ahead.
You also, maybe I don't know, maybe I'm about to say what you're about to say, but it's ironic because, you know, and oftentimes on this show with our conspiratorial mindsets, we tend to think that these inversions that we see are occurring purposefully, you know, like the people who set these things in motion on a grander scale, you know, the Kellogg's and all that in the food industry, you know, they have a certain amount of knowledge as to what's going on, and they've inverted what's natural in order to have a detrimental effect on us. And I mean, think about this. We take these polyunsaturated fatty acids and we heat them in the, you know, the hottest temperature, you know, for the cooking process, right? It's extremely high heat. Meanwhile, in your book, you mention how polyunsaturated fatty acids are effectively a type of antifreeze that solidifies at low temperatures. I mean, that sounds like an inversion to me. Like, we're taking something that nature designed to be a sort of benefit to those living in cold temperatures, and we're heating it, which is like the opposite of what it's designed for.
Oh, but this is gonna, like, sure, some listeners, this will blow their mind because obviously a lot of people haven't heard this. But yeah, exactly. So these omega-3s and omega-6s, they are in seeds. There's a lot of omega-6s, but in cold water fish, there will be more omega-3s. And obviously, the more north you go, the more omega-3s the fish have. And actually, if you go to the tropical fish have a lot more saturated fat and a lot less of the omega-3s. And even if you look at just palm oil or coconut oil, they are mostly saturated. It's because nature doesn't make mistakes. Those oils or the fats in those plants are a lot more saturated because they're in a tropical climate. And, you know, bro, our temperature is almost 37 degrees Celsius, you know, 98.6 Fahrenheit, I think, which is very, very warm. And the reason there's all these polyunsaturated fats in seeds is because when they're covered by the winter snow, they need to survive. They still have like a very low metabolism that kind of keeps the seed alive. It's still alive. It's not like an inert thing. And then it uses the distill liquid because they're polyunsaturated. They're very sort of difficult to freeze. Whereas like butter, you know, even at room temperature, it will be solid. So these basically allow the seed to survive the winter and then give it energy to sprout through the cold, frosty spring ground, right? So what's interesting is that the research that kind of came up that these polyunsaturated fats are essential for living creatures, or mammals at least, that was done in like the 30s by a husband and wife team. They were their last name was Burr, and they basically did some rat studies, and they basically withheld fatty acids and some of these fatty acids, and the rats started to develop various kind of skin issues, you know, scaly skin and stuff like that. So that was, if you actually start digging into the literature, that was basically the only evidence that was used to make like a linoleic acid, which is the omega-6, and then alpha-linolenic acid, the omega-3, to classify them as essential. And then decades later, they've done research where those skin issues that the rats were having, they could actually be resolved by adding certain B vitamins, by adding like certain minerals like zinc. So the entire thing is based on very, very shaky ground. And the reason these things sort of take off is because they just start to, the second paper cites the original paper, then the third paper will cite the other two, and they keep citing previous papers, and then someone does a meta-analysis or some other studies, and then they just have a body of evidence, which if you actually go right at the beginning to it, to the beginning of it, It's like there could be a massive methodological flaw. There could be straight up fraud, and that this comes up decades later. Another thing is like the cholesterol hypothesis and all that stuff. You know, it initially they fed rabbits. What did they feed them? Like a lot of saturated fat or cholesterol, and they started to develop atherosclerotic lesions. But like, for God's sake, were you giving rabbits cholesterol? They're herbivorous. They're like chewing on grass and leaves. So, you know, they use very poorly done science. And then from there on, it's kind of the media takes over. And then they know most people will not kind of really dismantle the evidence. It's the same like with the serotonin being the happy chemical. That's a lie that the drug companies just, they use their marketing and propaganda arms to amplify, right? So there's actually very scant evidence that these omega-3s and omega-6s are even essential for human metabolism. And just when you think about it, like just as a logical being, why would something in a fish like the DHA, EPA, those omega-3s, why of all things on the planet, why would things that are in a fish, oils in a fish, why would those be so super essential of all the things for a human? Does that make any sense to you?
You know, it would make sense if it was essential to people who lived in the climate where those fish were caught. But outside of that, yeah, no, I don't think it would not make sense if like everyone on Earth needed this one type of Arctic cod's, you know, bladder. That sounds a little far-fetched to me.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. So apparently, I haven't like delved super deep into some of the intricacies here, but apparently when you don't ingest these polyunsaturated fats, you're basically, your metabolism starts to increase. And that could be the reason why some of those rats were developing these skin issues, because if your metabolism increases, then obviously your vitamin, mineral, and caloric requirements increase. So the body starts to make trade-offs, and you know, the skin, the hair, things like that, the more nice to have type things are probably going to start exhibiting symptoms of deficiency first. But apparently when there is this polyunsaturated fatty acid or essential fatty acid deficiency, as it were, the body starts to actually make its own fatty acid called MEAD acid, which is, I think it's an omega-9 or something like that. I think it's a monounsaturated fatty acid that basically does those same functions, but better, right? And then in the animal world, if you look at it, a lot of hibernating animals like squirrels and whatever else, they actually munch on nuts to lower their metabolism and to lower their temperature so they can enter this torpor state of like just really low metabolism that allows them to lower their temperature and enter a hibernation state. And it kind of really makes sense why a lot of the tree nuts start to appear in kind of around the end of autumn, because then the organisms in that area, they can munch on the tree nuts. They can, these polyunsaturated fatty acids will slow down their metabolism. They're actual thyroid hormone sort of inhibitors. And that will allow those animals to basically survive the winter. So it could be that animals and plenty of organisms and animals, like even mammals, could be useful for them. But, you know, again, humans, we're 37 degrees almost Celsius, 98.6 Fahrenheit. We're not hibernating animals. We know the symptoms of low metabolism, of hypothyroidism, how horrible they are. Ask anyone. You know, I have clients with severe hypothyroidism. Just they have no libido. Their hands and feet are always cold. They're always cold. Just they're constipated. So it's a really horrible state to be in. But if you're a would-be ruler of the earth over the plebs, wouldn't you want them to think that that's the healthiest thing for them? That's essential because it will lower their metabolism. It's like it's a bit of a segue, but it's like fasting. This is something I kind of debunk in one of the chapters of the book. If you're a would-be ruler of the earth, wouldn't you want your lowly subjects, the great unwashed, wouldn't you want them to think that starving themselves, which is what fasting is good for them, that it's going to bring them closer to God, like in the religions, they kind of sort of portrayed that way. But now the new religion is scientism, so we can't tell them it will bring them closer to God because God doesn't exist, of course. It was just a big bang, don't you know? So now, in the new religion of scientism, we're going to say, yeah, if you starve yourself, you will upregulate the great autophagy. Don't you worry what that means, you know? And you will live longer because of that, right?
Yeah, it's exactly playing into their hand. And it's even more so here in the United States, where you have people, and maybe it's the same in other countries, I'm just ignorant, but you know, you have people who are basically turned into perpetual, you know, cattle, because they have they're locked into the pain management system of the United States' health. You know, arm, where you break a bone and then next thing you know, you need Percocets for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, this is playing right into that feudal lord's wet dream, where we're all just, you know, shuffling around on the earth, depleted of our energy, convinced that we're like these super athletes. Meanwhile, that most of us are running on empty. So talk to me about this, because I might have accidentally fallen victim to this. I've always been like a snacker of a person. Like, I've always really liked to eat, but I'm very skinny, very thin. I have a high metabolism. My dad is the same way. And I've recently, over the past year or two, maybe it's financially motivated, but I've gotten into the habit of eating one meal a day, sometimes two meals a day. And this is potentially damaging, according to what you're saying, right? What I'm doing to myself is not good by not eating as much as I possibly should be.
So you sound like, at least by your voice, you sound like you're pretty young still, right?
I'll be 30 in October.
Yeah, so you see, when you're young, that you don't feel those deleterious effects. These things start to, they begin to become more noticeable for many people, you know, around 35 plus, definitely in your 40s, that they start to definitely rear their ugly head. Because when you're, the younger you are, the more protective hormones you're still able to create, synthesize, you know, like testosterone, in women, progesterone, pregnenolone, DHEA. And these have a very protective effect against the more quote-unquote stress hormones like cortisol, everybody knows, but it's also estrogen is also a stress hormone. And a few other things that are purported to be good, like growth hormone and serotonin. Those actually are more stress hormones than anything, right? So the younger and healthier you are, the more you're able to meet that stress where it's at. That's why, you know, when I turned 30, I signed up to the local Thai boxing gym, and in that year I trained like crazy, and then I did a fight, my first Thai boxing fight. Wow. At the age of 30, amateur, yeah, but it's very stupid. But I did it, and I was able to, like, I was training like 6-8 times a week, and I was working full-time, had a full-time job, and, you know, it was going, that's when I met my wife, so we're seeing her a lot, and we're out drinking with the after sparring on a Saturday, we'd go drinking from like 3 p.m. to like 11 in the evening. You'd go home and just collapse because you're so freaking wasted and tired. And you can handle that. But the older you get, the less you're able to handle it. And that's kind of my because it's a longevity book, most people are just not thinking about this topic, I guess, until once they reach maybe 35, 40, it's becoming a bit more trendy that they start thinking about it. So I explain in chapter 4 why is skipping meals and fasting and cutting calories and stuff like that, why is that detrimental? And very simply, it's because of how we're able to survive those periods of not eating. Once a person understands the very simple physiological mechanisms at play, they can say, okay, well, that makes sense. I don't want to do that anymore. And the very simple physiological mechanism is the following. You have, let's say, your last meal a few hours ago. Over those last couple of hours, your liver was using its own stored glycogen that the meal kind of gave you to keep your blood sugar stable, to feed your brain, keep you alive and functioning, right? As you progress over the, let's say it's now 8 hours, 12 hours that you haven't eaten. Now, because you've used up a lot of that liver glycogen, you need to create glucose. And the way you create glucose is by basically degenerating your body. So your lean tissue, like your muscles, your bones, joints, cartilage, anything really that has protein, and collagen makes a massive portion of bone. It's like 35%. Of your bone is like amino acids, protein. And obviously skin has a lot of collagen, joints. So even parts of your organs will actually be atrophied by cortisol, by the signal of cortisol, to be broken down, break those cells down, send those constituents to the liver through the bloodstream. Then the liver creates glucose through a process called gluconeogenesis. And that's what happens. And now, of course, you are also going to burn some fat, but I think we're being sold a fairy tale that when you do intermittent fasting, let's say one meal a day, and you're eating, let's say your eating window is 2 hours and 22 hours you're not eating, we're told that a lot of that is, you know, autophagy, you're breaking down sort of damaged organelles in cells and recycling them and cleaning house, and you're burning a lot of fat, and you are burning some fat, but when you stop eating, those first, let's say, 3 or so days, a lot of, because you're not in ketosis yet, a lot of glucose has to be created because the central nervous system, the brain, they're very glucose hungry. Easily 120 grams a day of glucose has to be created while you're not eating. And that will come from lean tissue. And then, of course, the red blood cells, they also need about 30 grams a day. So, and then if you're moving, like I know some people also exercise when they're intermittent fasting. And that obviously requires, if it's intense exercise, it will require glucose to be created. So the demands for glucose will remain high regardless of whether you get into ketosis. Because even like ketosis, that can only account for like 60 to 70% of the energy that you kind of burn in, expend in a day. You're still creating quite a bit of glucose, even if you're like 20 days into a fast. So again, that process is facilitated by stress hormones like cortisol. And again, the way the glucose is created is by us liquefying our very precious lean tissue in order to make that. So that's the reason why I don't recommend it, because again, we can handle it when we're young, but once you understand that, but those little processes that are occurring in order for this to happen, you start, like, at least my clients, they're like, okay, well, damn, What do I do instead? And I tell them, start the day with fuel, right? Because you've been already going into the backup reserves, right? Over the course of your night. So let's say you're sleeping 7, 8, 9 hours. Already halfway into the night, you're already kind of starting to use your own body. It becomes an energy source. So when you wake up, if you start running around doing chores and tasks and whatever, your glucose needs go up. But if there's no fuel to burn, you become the fuel. So I tell people, fuel up, start the day fueled up. And then there's no need to then go hungry, because every time you go hungry, you are now starting to dip into your own reserves. And again, your own reserves would serve you better to remain there. Your muscle mass, your bones, your joints, all that good stuff. Like, that lean tissue becomes harder and harder to hold on the older a person gets, because the stress hormones, the cortisols, the estrogens, etc., they either stay the same or go up, whilst our testosterone, our DHEA, our protective hormones, they generally tend to decline. So there's this ever-widening gap that we're fighting against. And much of what I teach my clients is, this is the key to really longevity, is to narrow that gap. Instead of seeking ways to add stress on our body through, you know, these various things that we've discussed already, we should be trying to think of ways to kind of narrow the gap, so you spend more time rebuilding and regenerating, and with low stress hormones. That's kind of at least that's my strategy to longevity. It goes against a lot of famous quote unquote longevity influencers out there, but they're gonna come around to it, and unfortunately, a lot of their followers are gonna get hurt in the meantime, because not everybody's gonna get the memo. That's the unfortunate part.
Yeah. Well, it's very important, and I have several people in my life, well, including myself, who intermittent fast. I don't consider what I do intermittent fasting, because I really am not, that's not why I do it. It's more of just financially and time-wise, it makes more sense for me to eat a big meal at dinner, but I also spend a lot of time up at night, so the dinner time is actually more like a lunch time if you looked at my actual schedule. But yeah, I it's funny.
You're
the
a
timing.
Night owl?
Yeah, I tend to be. The funny thing is, I'm trying to alter that to get into a more positive swing, especially now that, you know, summer's sort of coming to an end. It's not easy to be a night owl in the winter. Yeah. It's the worst. You know, you wake up and the sun's pretty much all already gone. But yeah, no, the timing of this conversation is great, because I just had another episode recently where I was talking about fitness and meal plans and things like that. And this is hot on the heels of that one. So, but it sounds to me like fasting is a type of self-harm, you know, that people are taking on without even knowing. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsors. First and foremost, the HIIT Kit, the number one way to stay lit, and the brand new 3D printed HIIT kits are all the rage. I love them. Get back in swing as we start to head into the fall with the HIIT Kit. Whether you're soaking up the last few days of summer outside by the water, at the pool, by the lake, the HIIT Kit is the perfect waterproof storage device for your lighter and whatever you happen to be smoking on. So go and check out the HIIT Kit. Use the promo code CRAZY at hitkit.us or the HIIT Kit on Instagram. And we've got a new sponsor. Their name is Ra Optics. That's Ra like the Egyptian god, R-A Optics. And this is the solution for all this blue light pollution. That's right, the solution to the blue light pollution. Block out all the blue light with the yellow lenses or the red lenses. Each one is specifically designed for a certain time of day to keep you relaxed and keep the blue light at bay. So check out Ra Optics and use the promo code CRAZYOPTICS at checkout if you're in the market for some blue blocking lenses, which we all should be. It's a great way to take back your mental health, is by limiting the amount of artificial light you have in your daily life. So there you go, Raw Optics. Use a promo code CrazyOptics at checkout. And last but not least, BrainSupreme.co. That's right, BrainSupreme.co is your one-stop shop for all your microdosing needs. The founder and CEO, Adam Schell, is a premier premium microdosing coach. So you can even enlist him for help if you want to embark on a microdosing journey. Go and check out their products. There's a full range of products, some for athletes, some for people who just want a creative edge. Go for it. Don't hesitate. Brain Supreme. Adam Schell, he's the man. Go and check out my interview with Adam Schell and use the promo code CRAZY15 at checkout with BrainSupreme.co. And we'll be right back to our show with Christian Yordanov after a quick break to our dynamic ads. If you want every episode of the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast ad-free and interruption-free, sign up on Patreon or Substack and you'll help support the show. And until you do that, you're going to have to listen to the dynamic ads like this one. We'll catch you right after the break.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Is fasting and ketosis, I mean, talk to us about that, because I know ketogenic diets, this has become like a big fad. I see it in the grocery stores. And I personally don't think that, you know, I don't know that I've tried any like keto specific meals, but it seems to me like the keto foods are all just like regular foods with like keto branding on them. Like they just say like, you know, oh, this is keto because it doesn't have like bread in it or something. Like, so explain to me what keto is and how that is maybe a step from fasting and the downsides of it. Because with all of these health trends, we're only ever given the positives and or made to feel like it's a positive.
Yeah, I was on Yogi Zorananda's podcast, and I gave my version of the story of what fasting is, which I'll give a brief one here. And then he was on my podcast, and he gave the very interesting version of how it's done for spiritual purposes. Because absolutely, I still believe it can be a great tool for the spiritual side, but we have to also remember that a lot of the stuff that's on the spiritual side of things, a lot of it is kind of like a rite of passage. If you can think of like the vision quest, you know, you're not eating for several days, and then, you know, you drink the peyote or an ayahuasca sort of preparation, dieta, and then obviously followed by the ceremony. So fasting has to be approached in this sort of way of reverence to the process, and not like it's going to be this magical thing that will shower you with rejuvenation and life extension benefits, but it's this perhaps difficult thing that then will make, maybe it will hurt your body, that hopefully you bounce back from, but it's not about the body necessarily, it's about the how much stronger the mind becomes following it, or what you learn following it. So that side of things, I absolutely think there is a lot to be said for fasting if it's approached in the right way. But yeah, so what's interesting is that the ketogenic diet was designed to mimic fasting, right? Because when you fast, eventually you start producing ketones, ketone bodies, and they can be used to burn as fuel, as well as fats and carbohydrates or glucose. So that's why they designed it, because they noticed that people with, it was originally to help children with epilepsy. I think it was like in the 1920s or so that they started using it. I think they noticed that people, when they didn't eat, their epilepsy would improve. And that's how they figured out that if you restrict carbohydrates in the diet, it sends very much the same signal to the body as starvation, which is kind of interesting. So if starvation is bad for you, it kind of is, because you are slowly dying. Whether you call it fasting or starvation, it's really whether it's imposed on you or voluntary. But the outcome invariably in both cases will be death, unless it's interrupted, right? So that's clearly not a beneficial process. And then the way I kind of posit it in the book is, well, if that's not good, then obviously we shouldn't be doing things that mimic those states. Like, why would we want to mimic the physiology of starvation with a keto diet for health? Now, as an intervention, absolutely seems like for epilepsy and certain neurological things, there's some good research being done on that side of things. As an intervention, I think absolutely has merit, but as like a health strategy, or even as a way to lose weight, because I know some people say, oh, what about, you know, my Aunt Mary cured her diabetes with the keto diet. It's not really the keto diet that's so magical. It's the fact that if you're going from the standard Western, standard American diet to keto, it obviously you're not eating a lot of grains. You're eating more like steak and butter and real food, maybe more vegetables, maybe some berries. So you're eating a lot more cleaner and real food. And then obviously because you're eating a lot of fat, you feel more satiated. So you don't feel like eating as much. And lo and behold, you eat less and you eat cleaner food, less poison, chemicals and crap and emulsifiers. And of course, you're going to lose weight and feel a lot better. So it's not really so magical as a lot of people, they fall in love with it. But usually this is preceded by just really poor diet prior to that. And then, of course, you might go plant-based, you might go carnivore, you might go keto, and you will fall in love with that. And I'm not judging, because the amazing benefits of just being more intentional with your life and your diet. So the bottom line is, because we are sending the signal of starvation through the keto diet, is the body will start to lower its metabolism gradually over time. Not as quickly as when fasting, but it will start to do that. And I saw this myself back in like 2018 when I was doing keto. My thyroid hormones started, you know, indicating hypothyroidism. My cholesterol level was steadily increasing, which is actually a very classical sign of low metabolism, hypothyroidism, actually high cholesterol. That doesn't mean it necessarily it's from your food. It doesn't mean you need to take a statin or anything else. It usually means that your metabolism is slowing. And if you can correct that, the cholesterol level will likely kind of normalize or go down. So that's the thing, Brian, you know, and I think it's just like anything that becomes mainstream turns out invariably to be doing more harm than good. That's what it seems like with fiber, with fasting, intermittent fasting, keto. Now carnivore is also becoming a bit more mainstream. And it's just another form of a ultra low carb diet for many people. And it's just another way that you're sending a signal of scarcity to the body. And anytime you do that for a prolonged period of time, the body starts to down-regulate its nice to have functions. And these can be your hair. It can be your libido, your fertility. It can be higher thought. This is something that really a lot of people don't understand, is when you're in a stress state, your long-term planning, your sort of joy, happiness, altruism, higher sort of cognitive functions, higher thought, these get shut down because it's an emergency. And I don't see any reason we should be going out of our way to put ourselves in these states. And when you look at, again, the physiology of fasting, it's very similar with keto. It's very similar with low carb. It's very similar with just anything that puts a stress on your body. And that can be too much exercise, like marathon running, endurance exercise type stuff. It could be just working long hours, depriving yourself of sleep, you know, being in a sort of a toxic relationship or having a lot of trouble at work, or let's say with your boss or your colleagues. All of these states are very similar in terms of the hormonal response, whether it's like a psychological thing triggering it or a physiologic thing like fasting or a diet. The actual hormonal milieu in the body is quite similar. So we need to figure out what these things are, all of them that are detrimental, or templates of them, right? Archetypes of them, because everybody's situation is different. And then once we know what's the archetype of stress that's going to cause us to age faster and, you know, develop disease sooner, we just need to figure out for ourselves how to reduce those things. And obviously with diet, it's easy. With fasting, you just stop. Within too much exercise, you can reduce it. And then it gets a little bit trickier because, you know, you could be like with a relationship that's hard to get out of, or in a job that you can't get out of. But that's the strategy to reducing stress at the biochemical level. Wow. And every person has to sort of take stock of their life. Yeah. And start to figure it out for himself. Sorry, that was long-winded.
No, absolutely well put, and all stuff we need to hear. You know, it's funny because I never like to throw shade. You know, I don't particularly have any issues with Joe Rogan. I'm not a huge fan of his podcast, but I do listen to it from time to time. And I usually find myself getting frustrated with things Joe says. But regardless, I still like the show. And it's very important, I think, to have some alternative opinions on this. Because, yeah, the carnivore ketogenic diet has really taken that community by storm. You know, a lot of people who listen to Joe's podcast just naturally take his conversations as these sort of, you know, arbiters of truth, which I don't necessarily think that Joe is you know being maybe manipulative or anything. I think he's an earnest, you know, seeker of alternatives and whatnot, but he definitely has some misguided people on the show, or maybe people who are just not looking at all the evidence, as you kind of pointed out in the beginning. It tends to be the case with the field of nutrition, even medicine, where somebody will create a study that has a sort of bias in order to support their financial venture, or whoever the investors are, financial venture. But when it comes to keto and the carnivore diet, it's really interesting that you point out that the lack of carbohydrates sends a signal to the body that signifies starvation, because a year or two ago, I took a course about macrobiotics. And one of the things that the teacher instructed us was that rice is a super food because it's evolved over time with human beings. And this was kind of like a strange way to phrase it. I couldn't really find, like, you know, much evidence in the way of, like, you know, you go to wikipedia.com/rice and it says, oh yeah, rice has evolved alongside of humans. I didn't find a lot of stuff. I think they were just kind of speaking about rice as like a standard GMO, right? Like these foods that we have cultivated over time and changed them from their natural form. So I'm curious about carbohydrates and where they stand, because when I heard something like that, it almost made me feel like rice and these types of crops were unnatural because we've domesticated them to such a point. But maybe this domestication process has also had an effect on us, where when we don't have these carbohydrates, our bodies are, you know, wondering what's going on. Because if you look all over the world in indigenous cultures, most of them have a staple crop grain food that is like the basis of all their meals, you know, whether they're having, you know, meet because they've gotten a hunt successfully, or maybe certain crops are in season. No matter what, it seems like grain is something you can store and have all year round, and it becomes like this staple food. So is that why leaving the carbohydrates behind causes this kind of like shock effect in the body because we're so used to it?
Yeah, so a lot of good points. So I think most cultures, they would either have a grain or some kind of a tuber, like potatoes or yams and stuff like that. And to be frank, I don't like grains other than polished white rice without any fiber. Anything with like a very sort of hardened shell encapsulated thing, like a wheat or beans or lentils. I don't like any of these things. I don't recommend eating them, especially if they're super processed like pasta or bread. But white rice, if you look at the Japanese, some of the longest living people, and I'm not saying like they're doing a lot of things right, but they eat a lot of rice. So if it was carbs killing us, we would have known that a long time ago. But, you know, we've had grains or agriculture for like 10, 12 millennia. And I'm not saying I recommend eating grains. It's definitely not as a staple, definitely not with every meal. But then we also had sugar, which has been around for like more than 1,000 years. And like the last 300 years, we've been able to really refine and process and manufacture just tons and tons of it. And, you know, we had the Industrial Revolution that was basically fueled by sugar. And so we did not have the chronic diseases of today for a very long time. It was really very well correlated with the introduction of the seed oils. And in fact, even if I asked ChatGPT just to get the mainstream view, but the very first recorded heart attack was in 1912. And I've actually, for the research for my book, I started looking on PubMed.org, and there was like 40 or 50 published pieces between, you know, 1900 to 1940, 1950 on atherosclerosis and heart disease. And then there was, I think it was thousands or at least hundreds on cancer and diabetes, dating back as far back as like, I think for cancer, maybe as far back as the 18th century. But there was like just tons and tons more on cancer and diabetes. So heart disease is clearly something very, very new. Like we're talking 120 years or so. And so the whole thing about, especially some of the more zealous carnivore guys that say that sugar is a poison, you don't need any carbohydrates whatsoever. Just look at what digestive enzymes the human body produces. When you start chewing on food, you release in your saliva amylase, which is a starch digesting enzyme. So why the hell do we have this freaking enzyme that we produce in the saliva already if you know, carbohydrates are not, you know, a regular part of, or shouldn't make up a substantial portion of our, you know, dietary intake? And then we have a bunch of other carbohydrate digesting enzymes in the small intestine, pancreatic ones, like for maltose and lactose and stuff like that, right? So it's clear that just looking at the physiology of a human, that carbohydrates are something we were eating for a long time, right? And then just going back to what I said earlier, you know, if you remove carbohydrates, there was one study I cited in my book. It was a 4-day study. They put them on ketogenic diets and they were isocaloric, which means they weren't lowering their calories. And it just took 4 days for the thyroid hormones to start lowering, or the sort of the whole hormonal state to go catabolic, right? So you're breaking yourself down. So it's clear from that and the fact that the brain consumes so much glucose during the course of a day, like 100-120 grams, it's clear that we need carbohydrates if the nervous system, the central nervous system, uses it as its preferential fuel. And wait, where was I going with this?
And this reminds me of something that I think happened in the sort of the opposite way from where we were before, but in a similar vein. You know, in my early life, I was born in 1994. I remember there was a time when, what do you call it, margarine and other like butter alternatives became like this craze, because the word on the street was that butter was bad for you and fats are bad for you and you're going to get fat from eating fats. And now it's like very much the opposite. You go and look into research on fats, and I'm a big lover of ghee and yogurt and milk. I drink raw milk. I've even milked cows myself a couple years ago on a farm. And so I'm a big lover of like whole fats, and I've done my research into like homogenization and pasteurization. I know all the stuff about that. And it does seem like, you know, they took something that is natural and just a part of human pastoral life to have livestock, to milk them, to take these, you know, naturally occurring products and use them to their benefit. And then they've, over time, with certain communities of people, they've created this false impression that these things are unclean, unhealthy. And then what do? They pasteurize them, they homogenize them. And then the milk is so small, it becomes so small on a molecular level that it goes through your body like water instead of milk, instead of like a food like it should be.
Yeah.
And then people get all these issues and lactose intolerant. And I'm not an expert, so I can't exactly speak to how it all occurs. But I know that it's a lot more tricky than, oh, milk is not good for you. No, milk is great for us. It's just the how we've processed it through the Industrial Revolution. It's become this, you know, shadow of its former self. And I don't doubt that the same is true for something like, well, the average carbohydrate. I'm a big pasta guy, but at one point in my life, I worked at a whole grain bakery that only used sourdough aside from one loaf of ciabatta that they would make. But every bread was sourdough, and this has a really beneficial effect on your health, because those sourdoughs are a type of, you know, and I'm going outside of my expertise here, but it helps break down those sugars that in a, you know, non-sourdough bread, your body has a harder time dealing with, because these are just like really crappy, you know, shells of their former selves as far as food is concerned. It's not the whole product. It's this like reduced form of it.
Absolutely. We actually, a few days ago, we were at a Italian pizzeria here near us. It's an Italian couple that opened it around COVID times, and we were like their best customers because we used to live right by it. And then my wife got pregnant, and then we moved away, and I lost a bunch of weight. I don't know if it's correlated to the pizza place being near us, but so we went there, and the lady's mother, she's sometimes stays with her. And man, she could actually speak a little bit of English. And I asked her, how old are you? And because, you know, I'm almost looking at older folks and see what can I learn. Like, how, like, I'm just kind of not judging, but I am kind of like evaluating what have they done to protect their health, if they have done so, you know? So I asked her how old she is, and she told me she's 82. And I was almost in disbelief, like her skin was perfectly smooth, and I mean in terms of no blemishes and like moles, and a lot of people way younger than her already have these age spots, if you know what I'm talking about, those kind of liver spots they're also called. And that kind of that kind of really screams that it's, again, I don't recommend eating grains with every meal. I think a lot of people were eating it out of necessity back in the day, because people were poor. But these people, like her, they, you know, Italians eat pasta and pizza and bread and all the other things, of course. But so they were, the grains, the wheat was a staple for these folks all of their life. And yet she somehow, without probably any knowledge of nutrition and physiology and stuff like that, managed to look pretty damn amazing at the age of 82. So it's clear that the industrial food nowadays is the real culprit. I strongly believe if you have a little plot of land and you get some kind of ancestral, like einkorn wheat or whatever, or rye or whatever tickles your fancy, you know, and you grow it yourself with obviously your own organic fertilizer that you get from your livestock and whatnot, I'm pretty sure you will do pretty okay.
Yeah.
As opposed to this glyphosate-laden crap with all the other chemicals that then in a processed form with further like seed oils. And I mean, that's just, we're like going from food to poison territory.
Right. Well, and the same thing is true with sugars in the sense that, you know, outside of artificial sugars, correct me if I'm wrong, but fruits are a great source of natural sugars, and what are fruits sprayed with more and more these days is these awful pesticides. So
yeah,
is it the sugar that's the problem, or is it all the exactly. things that are coming along with it? Like, you know, it's just this little cornucopia of one tasty thing that you see, and then behind it are all these like tricky, rotten things that I wonder, though, with the correlation between the Industrial Revolution and sugar, sugars become more and more artificial. Things like candy and whatnot obviously are not healthy yeah. for us. But, you know, you see people in America on the streets, living in the, on the streets, you know, fully addicted to drugs. And for the most part, sugar is all they'll eat. I've witnessed it, you know, as somebody who has unfortunately had to live along and work alongside people in this condition. God bless mm-hmm. them. But yeah, they'll just buy like ice cream and only eat ice cream. And it's kind of interesting, like if sugar is such this poison, like why are people in this terrible state of addiction seeking out sugar like it's this fuel source, right? I mean, if it's such a poison,
yeah.
which I again, they're not exactly in perfect states of health to begin with, yeah. but it is just odd that they go for sugar only.
You know, that's a very good observation. And this really is a great example of the whole concept of stress eating, right? You know, a lot of people, they're like, go chocolate or whatever, cake. And these folks clearly have had very stressful lives. Potentially trauma is involved. And it's actually pretty amazing that their body's signaling to them to eat these sugary foods, because cortisol, which is this hormone that will invariably be elevated, not just in disease, but anytime there's like a history of trauma, just anytime there's like PTSD, cortisol will be elevated, right? Or depression, schizophrenia, even diabetes. So in most conditions and diseases. But then if you eat sugar, insulin will rise as a response to the sugar entering the bloodstream. And insulin and cortisol are like a seesaw. They oppose each other. So when insulin goes up, the body knows that there's sugar or glucose in the bloodstream. So cortisol can go down because cortisol's main role is to elevate the blood sugar so that you can muster an energetic response to a stress, right? So that stress can literally, while we're sitting here, if you start like thinking negative thoughts and like imagining you're being chased by like a lion, you could raise your cortisol, and that will raise your blood sugar, right? And then this is just a clear example that these folks know to take the sugar, because that's maybe a suboptimal way, but it's one way to lower your stress levels, you know? So it's pretty amazing, actually.
Well, and you know, I don't want to use folks in that state as an example of health, right? Obviously. But mm-hmm. I think that you volleyed my serve really well, because that's exactly what I think intuitively I was going for, is like there's got to be a physiological explanation for why. Yeah. And you just nailed it. So thank you for yeah. pointing that out. And then the other thought that I had when it comes to sugar and all this, I mean, again, with the whole fat situation in the 90s, they were, and in the early 2000s too, I mean, it was really only in the past 15 or so years that people started to kind of turn their impression of fat around, but for a while it was like fat is bad. If you eat fatty foods, you will become a fat person. And this just isn't the case when you're eating fatty foods that are whole foods, organic foods, you know, not laden with pesticides, not coming from animals who are, you know, butchered after suffering their whole lives in a, you know, 2-foot by 6-foot box. So yeah, there are downsides to some of it, but you have to be aware of how your food is getting to your table, right? So the best way, and I think you in Portugal probably have this easier than maybe some folks in other countries, maybe not, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like where you're at, it's a lot easier to get food directly from the farm to your table. There's not a lot of steps in between, or from the, you know, from the boat to the table, so to speak, whether you're eating seafood or and that is instrumental. I think that's one of the biggest ways we can start to get our health back, is recognizing how much damage the Industrial Revolution has done. And, you know, we don't have to get rid of all these cars and boats and planes and whatnot, but we can start to go back to a way of eating that's closer to how human beings have lived for thousands, tens of thousands, millions, even years.
Yeah, man. But just going back to the whole seed oils, the PUFAs, the polyunsaturated fats, those alone, they're not just a fat that you're eating. So that's what a lot of people did, and it's through no fault of their own. It's the media that's portraying them. You just have to be mindful. Don't eat too many calories. They're constantly calling us like just these gluttonous, lazy sort of pieces of crap that we don't exercise. You know, we're not watching our calories and stuff like that. Then a lot of people are. That's the thing. You know, a lot of people are following the guidelines and the food pyramids and all the movement sort of exercise guidelines, but yet people are getting sicker and sicker. The thing is, the seed oils, they're not empty calories only. They're actually, they have very much metabolic and hormonal effects, such as, like I already said, they lower the metabolism. So that alone, if you imagine, let's say 2000 calories a day with saturated fat only, mostly. But let's say you now get 2000 calories and 10% of that comes from polyunsaturated fats. If I'm just throwing numbers out here in the air, if that lowers your metabolism by, let's say, 1-2%, now it's as if you're adding 2% more food, more calories per day. So that's one effect. So that alone can cause a creep up in weight. Obviously, a very simplified example. But then on top of that, they're also damaging your organs, your blood vessels. So they're actually damaging, like, your kidney, your pancreas, which secretes insulin and stuff like that. And then on top of that, they're causing your inflammatory burden to increase, because these are the omega-6s, like linoleic acid. That's an actual real-life precursor to certain inflammatory molecules we create in the body that cause damage in the body. So even just replace, and here's the thing, Harvard Health Press, World Health Organization, what's the other clown show? Oh, American Heart Association. All three of those still recommend getting 5-10% of your calories, daily calories, from omega-6s. Now think about it. Wow. Lower metabolism, damaged organs over time, more inflammation. And I mean, and of course, that inflammation can lead to insulin resistance, and that it can cause you issues with metabolizing food that you normally would have, like glucose, the carbs, they might not get processed as well. So just think over like 3-4 decades. I mean, of course, that's going to spell disaster for you. So I think this is why it's such an important thing in the first volume of the book, is because people still have not gotten the memo. People still, even like folks I know that don't cook with the stuff at home, with the seed oils, whatever, they still might eat out 2, 3, 4, 5 times a week. And they just have to be reminded that each one of those times, you could easily hide 20 grams of polyunsaturated fats in a meal. Very easily. Like, think of 20 grams. It's nothing. It's not even an ounce. And think of if it was cooked food on a high heat, think of think of the carcinogenic sort of aspect in those. So I think just removing that aspect out of a person's diet, that alone could literally reverse many people's health problems. Just that alone. Honestly, I believe that.
Wow. Wow. And as you're saying that, it just came to mind that one of my favorite, and this could go either way, because this is a seed oil, or no, this isn't a seed oil, but this is a seed. And I have heard that hemp seeds have omegas in them, but I'm curious because I've also heard that hemp has anti-inflammatory properties. And one of the things that I have on a weekly basis is a latte. And the coffee shop I go to is they use hemp milk if you choose so. You know, they have alternatives. So I get the hemp milk because it just tastes great, I think. But I'm curious, am I being sold down the hemp milk river here? What's going on with my hemp milk?
Well, of course, I'll be honest. And I personally, I eat very few nuts and seeds or anything from them in general. And that's what I recommend to my clients. But in fairness, a lot of my clients are coming with a health issue. Some it's all about longevity, but a lot of them are with health issues. And it's just a more conducive environment to improve someone's health if we remove a lot of the potentially inflammatory things. But like I said earlier, you know, we had pizza the other day and, you know, last month we had pizza again. And it's, I don't think we need to, if you're doing something once a week and it's a little treat indulgence, I definitely don't want to seem like I'm this sort of puritanical guy or whatever that, you know, the modern world is the modern world and we have to just get the big ducks in a row. I don't know if that's the right expression to use, but things like having a water filter, having a shower filter, that's people forget that. And it costs like $50-$100 at least to get the chlorine out, you know, having air filters, buying the food organic. A lot of people will already have that sort of done, and taking basic supplements like minerals, vitamins to support detoxification, and obviously not eating a lot of ultra processed crap.
Right.
Once you have that dialed in and you don't have like a health issue to restore your health from, so you don't have to be like super strict, I think at that point it's better to just live your life, because it can, for some people, this can turn into orthorexia, where, you know, you just become very difficult like to go out with. And I know I've been down that road. And my wife at certain points will be like, look, you need to just chill the hell out. And that's just, you're causing more stress than the freaking food is going to cause us damage, you know?
Right, right.
So I've tried to kind of relax a little bit.
I don't want to give that impression of you, because that's not how your book comes off at all. It's very accurate and precise and not at all like a, hey, stop everything you're doing and change every part of your life. It's something that I think anyone can take in and realize, like, from this, oh wow, seed oils are something I do not want to engage with, you know, and as minimal as possible, right? You don't have to go crazy, but yeah, it's something you don't want to cook with yourself, and if you can, not order food that is cooked with it. Christian, I love it, man. This is inspiring. You found me at a perfect time. My mind is focused on this kind of thing. You know, sometimes with this show, as you know, since you've listened to it, I try to stick with like more historical topics or political topics or sciencey type topics. And this one is so much more important than all those other topics, because as you just pointed out, like if our brains aren't operating at their highest potential, we can't even think clearly to sort out all this other stuff. Yeah. So yeah, this exactly. is the foundation for everything. So you'll be exactly. joining me back again very soon. I really like this conversation and many more to come. So for the audience tuning in, please go support Christian. His links are in the description. You can find the book on Amazon, and you can also check it out directly at their website. Excuse me, at their website, howtoactuallylivelonger.com. But until then, folks, we'll see you next episode, and immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the now. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning into this episode of the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast with your host, Mystic Mark, here. And our guest, Christian Yordanov, is the author of a book titled How to Actually Live Longer, Volume 1. And hopefully Volume 2 will be out soon. And we'll have Christian back on the show before then, I'm sure, because he's got tons more to talk about. So if you have any questions for Christian on Round 2, please send them over to me on Instagram at My Family Thinks I'm Crazy. You can comment on the post that I make about this exact episode. That's the best way to streamline the questions to me for the next interview with Christian. And the same goes with Todd, or really any guests that I have on the show. If you'd like me to have them back on the show, just say so. Send me a message, leave me a comment on the Instagram page, or send a DM. You can catch us on X at MFTIC Podcast. And that's really it for social media, all I can think of right now. And then, yeah, I definitely am going to be posting some more stuff to YouTube, as people might have gathered by my Instagram post about funding the filming project at Mystic Mark on Venmo. If you want to help fund this new project to get out and film some of America's strange places, particularly New England. And yeah, that'd be a lot of fun to get that off the ground. We already kind of got the ball rolling in a small way, so we'll see what happens. But support the show if you want to see the show grow. At Mystic Mark on Venmo is the best way to do that, and I'll give you a shout out. You can also sign up on Patreon or Substack and get something out of it, meaning you get the entire episode of each podcast that I put out instead of just half or 65% of the episode. So you're going to get more for the value you bring back to the show, bonus episodes and all that good stuff. So, and we're also going to do a supporters only Zoom meeting this month. So I think we're going to do it on the 29th, which is about a week from when this episode will be released, a week and a few days. So if you want to be there for the Zoom meeting, make sure you're signed up on the Patreon or the Substack to participate, and you can talk to me and everyone else there. No rules, really. Just be respectful of each other. And yeah, sign up on the Patreon and the Substack to hear more about that. And until next time, folks, thank you for tuning in. Immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the night.
Broadcasting the moon matrix from the lunar surface. They want you confused like you never knew your purpose. Hopping through the portals, dismantling the machine. My family thinks I'm crazy, I can't believe what I've seen. Memories of a war, the Pleiadians and Anunnaki. Stuck within the genes of a copy of a human body. DNA fractal, the universe within me. Epiphanies of science is hoarded by the Illuminati. Puppet masters know the power of the mantra. Repeating mad lies till it has an effect on ya. Subliminal messages hijack your perception. Tricking the population with holographic projections. We see through it. The system is unraveling. I'm astral traveling through the library of the Vatican on a sacred journey. I embark with the squad forever spitting truth like Mark on the pod. Gotta know the facts, never hold back, cause I ain't getting caught up in the soul trap. I dissect the fabric of reality, looking for the answers, searching through the galaxy. You might be feeling stressed out. Depression, anxiety is no measure of health to be well adjusted to a sick society. You don't even know how powerful you are. We the ones who gonna expose the whole facade. I awoke in a deep underground military base. Zero recollection of how I got to this place. Alien corpses floating in glass cylinders. Must have been extracted when they crashed into us. Animal hybrids contained in the cages. A lion with the eagle head. Monkeys with reptilian faces. Losing my mind and I'm feeling desperate. I look around the room and I see no sign of an exit. All of a sudden the wall flickers away, revealing a hangar full of spacecraft. My getaway, I run to the nearest one. See a guard, knock him out, robbing for his plasma gun. Hop in the ship, take the controls. They highly intuitive, I figure it out easily. Lift off, accelerate through a tunnel until I see the light. Fly into the sky, get flanked by six F-35s. Gotta know the facts, never hold back. I ain't getting caught up in the soul trap. I dissect the fabric of reality, looking for the answers, searching through the galaxy. You might be feeling stressed out. Depression, anxiety is no measure of health to be well adjusted to a sick society. You don't even know how powerful you are. We the ones who gonna expose the whole facade.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.